This show is live and local. It's your connection to local music and more.
Thank you for responding to our call to share your comments about federal funding with your congressional representative. Because the future of WILL and public broadcasting is at stake, it is important that your elected representatives hear directly from you about whether or not funding for public broadcasting should be continued. An easy way to stay informed is to sign up at 170millionamericans.org. That's 170millionamericans.org. Thank you.
On today's show, we have a conversation with Dana Robinson, who is professor of organ performance at the University of Illinois School of Music. And he is doing something that is pretty rare, which is performing with an orchestra, the University of Illinois Chamber Orchestra. As a matter of fact, tomorrow night, some music by Charles-Marie Vidor. I was going on memory by his name, and I actually got it right. Charles-Marie Vidor. Symphony sacré of his, Sacred Symphony. And the later portion of the show, we'll be talking with Sandra and Larry Woolley of the Bement Country Opry. Sandra is going to be playing with another performer, a Chet Atkins tribute show tomorrow night. And so we'll be hearing some of her playing and hear about the Opry. It's live and local on FM 90.9. Was probably the most popular piece of music, or even a partial piece of music, by Charles-Marie Vidor, the toccata from his Symphony No. 5 for solo organ. That was played by Michael Murray on the Aeolian Skinner organ of Symphony Hall in Boston, and heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Tomorrow night at 7:30, there's a concert by the University of Illinois Chamber Orchestra at Smith Memorial Hall in the recital hall there, where there is a Cassavant organ, and it is going to be played by Dana Robinson, who is the professor of organ at the University of Illinois. And it's not very often that you get to hear a piece of work for organ and orchestra, so that should be a real treat, especially for organ fans, but for anybody else who likes lush, romantic music paired with some very different sorts of music on that program. Also, there's a world premiere of a new piece by a student composer at the university, and then also the fabulous work by Bela Bartok, his music for strings, percussion, and celesta. On this portion of Live and Local, we have with us Dana Robinson in the studio, and thanks very much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So you're a native of the town that organ is located.
Close enough.
Or that located.
Close enough.
Meaning that you're not quite a native of Boston?
Right.
But it says so in your bio.
I didn't write my bio.
So where are you from?
I'm from nearby.
Nearby.
Suburbs, yeah.
Yeah, and you've been at the university now how long? I've lost track.
I think about 10 years.
10 years. And yeah. You started with a rather small appointment and a small studio and gradually built it up to what I understand is a pretty large and successful
pretty
studio.
Good, yeah.
And so you're finally full-time as of a few years ago, I guess.
That's right.
You actually made some snarky comments to me as we were listening to that performance about the particular organ.
I never make snarky comments.
No, certainly not. But it was leading to a question. Organists are, to some extent, limited, sort of like pianists. You have to play the instrument where you're asked to play.
That's right.
How much do you have the option most of the time when you're asked to play somewhere of saying, no, I don't want to play because I don't want to play in that organ for one reason or another?
You do have that option, I suppose, but it depends on how much you want to be playing. If you want to play selectively, then you can turn things down. But, of course, you always have to be careful not to say, I don't want to play there because I don't like the organ. You have to find another reason, usually.
Because you won't that'll get around, and then people won't want to ask you at other places.
Could be, I don't know, because whoever is trying to promote organs, you want to try to support that anyway, because it might be an endangered species. So anything that we can promote, we try to promote. So I don't turn much down, but I won't play on electronic organs for the most part. But
Because
they're not organs.
You want to go into that?
No.
I mean, I know that there's among organ builders and among organists, there are definite prejudices, as there are, between oboe, among oboists. You know, I don't like this instrument or I like that instrument. And I imagine that a lot of what organ you play on or what music you play on a particular organ depends on how well a style or a composer's music matches up with a particular instrument.
That's true. Some organs, for instance, a small organ, the piece that I'm playing tomorrow night, the Vidor, this couldn't be performed on a small instrument. It takes a large instrument to match the sound of the orchestra. So regardless of style, an instrument that would be too small would not be viable for that repertoire.
And is that because it's an orchestra, or say even this piece that was just played there, that we just heard?
The F major toccata. No, that takes a relatively large organ too. Perhaps not, you don't have to be matching the sound of the orchestra, but it's conceived for a large scope instrument, not for something small.
Talk about what constitutes large versus small when it comes to organs.
Well, organs have numbers of keyboards, first of all, so you can have an organ with one keyboard and no for the hands and none for the pedals, all the way up to five keyboards for the hands and one for the feet. And so that's an element of size. And of course, it's absolutely no reflection on the size or value of an instrument, or excuse me, on the value of an instrument, what size it is. So a wonderful organ from late Renaissance Italy might have a single keyboard and no pedals at all, and it's just as viable and just as valuable to us as a five-manual organ from the mid-19th century in France, for which Vidor wrote most of his music.
Viable meaning depending upon what kind of music you want to play.
Right.
The Cassavant organ at, I did remember the maker, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
At Smith Hall. Tell us about that.
It's a middle to large size instrument, and it's in a fairly eclectic design. It's not designed to play any particular segment of the repertoire necessarily better than any others.
That was the design.
That was the intention at the time, and that was. At the time, 1964, when the organ was built, builders were consciously trying to make organs perhaps less romantic, so trying to find sounds that were more suitable to playing Baroque music in addition to organ sounds that were more viable for romantic music or more suitable to romantic music.
So what would constitute a romantic organ?
You ask the hardest questions because it takes an entire book to.
Well,
to
I realize that, but
think of the orchestra as the orchestra goes from the classical period into the romantic period, it gets fatter, and organs do too. So there's more doubling of sound at the same pitches in the romantic organ than there is in the earlier examples.
Does that mean in part that you will have more stops available?
Yes, usually. So most romantic organ music is thought of in terms of a larger instrument. It's a vast generalization, but it can be true.
So large is number of pipes, it's number of different, essentially number of different instruments represented within the instrument, because many of the stops are labeled with as orchestral sounds.
Yeah, we don't really like to think of them that way. That's more like more a case that we have an organ stop and it happens to resemble an orchestral instrument in its timbre, not because we consciously try to make it sound exactly like an orchestral instrument, because it never will.
But it may approximate, like you have one called the trumpet or the
right, but that's
the
that's it's
so
the comparison comes from the other direction, really, because we think of the organ stop sounds like a trumpet. Not that we try to make an organ stop sound like a trumpet.
So it gets that name because it's as close
right.
as you can.
That's
up
right.
But yeah. Then you have other stops that don't necessarily have instrumental or even color names. They will add octaves or add
That's
partial
right.
octaves or something.
That's
like
right.
That. What do you call those? I mean, do they have special names?
They don't have special names. No. I mean, they usually have names that also correspond to whatever other instruments they resemble. but that's all. And then we have an indication on every stop as to what its pitch level is. So that's how we know what pitch it's going to sound.
And why would you have 2, 3, 4, 5 keyboards? What would you do with those? You don't have 10 hands.
No, but you can move quickly from one to the other. And there's a limited number of stops you can have a single keyboard play. So if you want 100 stops in an organ, you need 3 or 4 keyboards.
So you're not going to play them all at once, but if you want to have a during a different, maybe during an organ symphony, you want to change color quickly.
That's right.
You can either press.
You can either move your hands from one keyboard to another. You can change combinations. You can have an assistant change combinations. You can do all kinds of things. You can even play 2 keyboards at once because there are mechanisms that enable one keyboard to draw the keys of another.
Is that what's called coupling?
Coupling, yeah.
Which you can also do on harpsichords,
that's right,
too. Yeah. Yep. How often does one use an assistant to pull stops and things like that?
Well, prior to the advent of 19th century technology that enabled stops to be moved by mechanisms that the player operates with his or her feet, you always had to have an assistant. So Dietrich Buxtehude, for example, always had assistants in the balcony, pulling and pushing stops.
He was a similar time as Bach. Would Bach have had assistants?
Oh, certainly, yeah. But Bach's pieces tend not to require changes of color as much, say, as those of Buxtehude.
How can you tell from looking at a piece of organ music, let's say of Bach's music, that I need to change color here, or I need to change color there, or I don't?
Well, there are conventions. There are matters of historical performance practice that we understand, and most of the time in Bach, you start with one sound and you finish with that sound in the vast majority of his pieces. Earlier pieces by the great North German composers, such as Buxtehude, that requires a little bit more thought because the longer the piece, the likelier it is that you need to change color at some point or another when the texture changes or between sections.
And what about somebody like Charles-Marie Vidor?
There are very, very strict conventions in 19th century French music. French composers have always tended to indicate exactly what they want. German composers not.
And do you have freedom to ignore them?
You have freedom to adapt them. You ignore them at your own peril, because
because the organ Nazis will come after you and say, you better not do that.
No, because it usually doesn't sound very good to ignore them.
When you say adapt, you mean adapt to whatever organ you have available.
Right, because very few two instruments are the same.
So you might, if Vidor calls for a particular sound or a particular stop, your instrument doesn't have it. You have to come up with
that's exactly
somewhat similar.
Yeah.
How common is it? I mean, I sort of introduced this whole topic by saying that it's a rarity to have an organist playing with an orchestra. Is it as rare as I think? And if so, why is that?
There isn't very much repertoire. It's fairly difficult to write for organ and orchestra because, you know, it takes very great skill as an orchestrator to make the two sounds work together. And so there are very few pieces. There are 2 concertos by Rheinberger. There's the often performed concerto by Poulenc. And just a handful of other pieces for a large orchestra and organ. Of course, there are the Handel concertos are among the earliest keyboard concerto repertoire. But that's for a very small group with a small instrument, a small organ. But bigger pieces are not that common.
And I think of the Saint-Saëns Organ Symphony, which isn't really for organ and orchestra. It's just the organ comes crashing in at the beginning of the last movement.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound to me like it usually has really a whole lot to do.
That's right.
Other than make a big sound.
That's right.
Filling in the orchestra.
Yeah.
You've played that piece, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what about this piece? Is this the only one of Vidor's pieces that has orchestra, or are there more?
Well, he wrote also his third orchestral symphony calls for organ very much the way that of Saint-Saëns does. And in fact, it's been observed that it's derived quite a bit from Saint-Saëns' own piece. But this piece is very different. It's somewhere between that kind of relationship between the organ and the orchestra and the relationship that would be seen in a concerto.
And the piece is?
Sinfonia Sacra, Opus 81.
which just means sacred symphony.
Sacred symphony, yeah.
And is it essentially a symphony for orchestra plus organ, or is it conceived as a solo vehicle for the organ?
It's somewhere in between there. It's not a heroic 19th century concerto part, like, say, one of the Brahms piano concertos, something like that. It's nothing like that, but it certainly isn't that the organ is just there to punctuate the orchestral symphony either.
Don Schleicher is the conductor of the university orchestras and will be conducting this concert, mm-hmm. I presume. Did he come to you with this suggestion, or did he say, you know, I'd like to do something with you, or did you go to him and say...
He came something? To me last summer and said that you'd like to do something. And one of the obvious choices, of course, is the Poulenc Concerto, which is often done. But in my mind, that's the piece that, you know, every organist pulls out when he has the opportunity to play a concerto. The advantage here was the Poulenc Concerto is you have to rent the parts. And this particular piece by Vidor, Sinfonia Sacra, I performed this about 5 years ago at the 50th anniversary convention of the Organ Historical Society. And at that time, it had been suggested that we do it, and we had to find a set of parts. So I looked all over the world, literally using WorldCat, the worldwide library system, to find a set of very rare set of parts for this piece. And lo and behold, here they were in the orchestra library of the University of Illinois.
After your complete world search, here they were sitting
they were.
In your
yeah.
in your house, so
yeah,
to speak.
That's right.
Which then cost nothing.
That's right.
To use. Well, this is a one movement work, or several sections labeled as movements, but they all run together.
It's a sectional piece, yeah.
About 25 minutes.
Yeah.
So we've picked a part, you've picked a part in the first section about 3 minutes in, mm-hmm. or 3-4 minutes in.
Mm-hmm.
Anything to say by way of introduction to this section other than just playing?
Sure. The piece, Vidor wrote the piece in 1906. He was inducted into the Society of Fine Arts of Berlin. And his close friend and one-time pupil, Albert Schweitzer, suggested that since this was a German society, that he write his piece based on a German theme. And Vidor had come to believe by this point that organ music sounded best when it was based on themes from the repertory of church music, so Gregorian chant and chorales. And so he chose Nun kommt der Heidenheiland, the great Advent hymn based on an Ambrosian chant. And this is the part we're going to hear here is where the organ first states this. It's previously been stated by a solo violin. Now the organ has its turn, and this will be developed with a couple of other themes over the course of 3 or 4 minutes. And you'll hear a big buildup, and then the brass will come in stating the chorale theme again. Vidor makes constant use of this theme, even when it isn't particularly obvious to the listener, by taking fragments of it and developing them. But in these two sections, the brief section that we'll hear now, you'll hear the chorale stated in its complete form, first by the organ, and then later at this a big orchestral climax by the brass.
And we're going to take a little bit of the orchestral material leading into
yep.
that. And I will say on your behalf, because you said this to me, that there are only a couple of recordings of this piece, and this is not among the better.
Well, this is actually...
Well, this is the better one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But still with many problems. So,
well, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, if you hear bad things happen, it isn't Dana Robinson playing. It's Paul Wiskirchen?
Yeah.
And the Philharmonic Hungarica, Gerzenich Orchestra of Cologne, Volker Hempfling, the leader here on Live and Local. It's from the Symphonia Sacra of Charles-Marie Vidor, which you can heard played in its entirety with Dana Robinson as the organist and the University of Illinois Chamber Orchestra tomorrow night at 7:30 at Smith Music Hall on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. Donald Schleicher conducting. that's the end of that section of the Sinfonia Sacra, Sacred Symphony of Charles-Marie Vidor, a Frenchman born in 1844, and that performance with organist Paul Viskirchen and the Philharmonia Hungarica, Gerzenich Orchestra of Cologne, Volker Hempfling conducting. You can hear the complete work performed tomorrow night at 7:30 at Smith Recital Hall on the University of Illinois campus by the U of I School of Music professor of organ, Dana Robinson. It's a pretty rare opportunity to hear an organ with orchestra, and he's a very fine organist, to say the very least. In your biography, you list a number of different places that you've played, or somebody lists a number of different places that you've played. Are there favorite organs from in the country, around the world, that you have particularly enjoyed?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there are.
You want to mention
lots
a few?
Of them.
You don't have to mention the ones you don't like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the great organs in my memory for performance was there's an organ from 1680 in Koppel in North Germany. One of the best surviving organs of the great North German organ builder Arp Schnitger. I'd say that has to be the absolute highlight for me for having performed on. That one was.
Is that kind special. Of, is that a Baroque size organ, a smaller organ?
Well, there are large organs from the Baroque period too, but this is a medium-sized one. Yeah.
Any others?
Any others?
Any in this country?
Sure. Let's see. Well, this organ that I performed this Vidor on before was an organ from the 1880s in Troy Music Hall in Troy, New York, a distinguished example of 19th century American organ building. Probably more important to me than that is a spectacular organ, very, very beautifully preserved in Bangor, Maine. It's from the Boston builder E.N.G.G. Hook, and it was built in 1860. And it's beautifully preserved and restored, those parts of it that needed restoration. And it's one of the most significant organs remaining from that time period in this country. And it's fairly large for that time and place, too.
Well, you can hear Dana Robinson performing on a cast of an organ from Canada.
That's right.
Is that what that company is?
Yep.
Tomorrow night, 7:30 at Smith Music Hall. Thanks very much for joining us on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And best of luck with tomorrow's collaboration. Our programs today on FM 90.9 are made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, offering over 30 varieties and blends of whole bean or ground coffee at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Coffee, tea, and chai are available from their retail store, in local restaurants, and through Columbia Street Roastery's coffee service. More information is available at 352-9713. Coming up in just a few moments, we will be talking with Sandra and Larry Woolley of the Bement Country Opry. Sandra is going to be joined by Mike Latham tomorrow night at their weekly music session in a program called Pickin' on Chet, reference to Chet Atkins. And we'll be hearing from Sandra and Larry. They own the Opry. In just a few minutes here on Live and Local. Here is a little bit from the music for strings, percussion, and celesta of Béla Bartók, which is going to be on the second half of tomorrow night's concert by the University of Illinois Chamber Orchestra. In this case, we hear the Cleveland Orchestra led by Christoph von Dohnányi. That's some of the second movement of the Music for Strings, Percussion, and Celesta by Béla Bartók. Wonderful piece of music, and if you get a chance to go out tomorrow night and hear it with the University of Illinois Chamber Orchestra, it's a free program, 7:30 at Smith Music Hall on the University of Illinois campus. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our show is made possible with support from these business partners: Freestar Bank of Champaign, Ray's Heating and Air Conditioning of Urbana, Prairie Ridge Farms Incorporated of Allerton, Roland Realty of Champaign. These business partners join the friends of WYLL in making great programs possible, and we thank you very much. The Bement Country Opry hosts music every Friday night and on occasional Saturdays. And in tomorrow night's program is called Pickin' on Chet, featuring Mike Latham and Sandra Woolley. It's a program of music. Well, I'll have to get this clarified, but I assume it's some sort of Chet Atkins tribute. Starts at 8 o'clock. And Sandra Woolley and husband Larry are the owners of the Bement Country Opry, and they're both with us here on the show. Thanks for coming over to join us.
Thanks for asking us here.
When did you start the Opry, and why?
Well, we've been involved in the opera work for about 35 years. The Bement Country Opry, we have owned and operated since 2001, September of 2001. I was a member of the show, and the people that had it were retiring and was approached us and to see if we might be interested in carrying on the music and the show, and we decided to go ahead and do that. So we became the proud owners of the Bement Country Opera at that point. And so we've been doing shows every weekend from that point on.
So you said you took it over in 2001, or it's been around since 2001?
No, we took it over in 2001. It had originated with previous owners and had been for about 10 years previous to that.
And always just with weekend performances, or have there ever been more often?
Yes, I believe it was just weekend performances. Our shows are every Friday night, and we use several area guests, and we do bring in some Nashville and some noted guests as we go along, too. So, plus, we also have a show once a month on a Saturday called the Saturday Night Music Club, which consists of a group of our musician friends that we've worked with for 30-some years on the opera work, too. So it's a fun thing to be involved in.
So is the Saturday Night Music Club, is that in addition to some of the special shows you bring in?
We have a lot of our Nashville shows coming in on the Saturday Night Music Club. However, we also have some of the special shows coming in on the Friday night shows, too. So it's kind of a mix.
You want to talk about some of the ones coming up?
Sure. Well, this weekend, of course, is Pickin' on Chet. Chet Atkins is, I've always loved his music and try to play his style of music. I don't quite get it as good as he did, but.
Well, that's why he was Chet Atkins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was the best. But this guitar player, Mike Latham, that's coming in as a guest to do the show with us this weekend. He is an excellent guitar player. He lives in Atlanta, Illinois, I believe. And we've worked together several times over the years. And so we decided to put this tribute show together for Chet Atkins. And we'll be using the house band. We have a house band, same group that's there on Friday night. Every Friday night they come in, we do a show, we back the guests and feature each one of them. There's about seven pieces in the house band, which consist of piano and guitar. I play the lead guitar, and we have a steel guitar and a drummer and a bass player and some backup vocalist. And it's a full-scale country music show.
You just handed me your brochure, and I see that you've got on March 11th, which is a Friday, you have the King family, who were just on this radio show yesterday.
Oh, really?
Well, we had five of the nine of them in our studio, and they did some playing. They're going to be participating in this indoor bluegrass festival
right
Saturday night here in Urbana.
Uh-huh. Yes, they're going to be on the show on the 11th of March. Their whole family, we're really looking forward to that. I don't know, what is there, about 10 of them or so?
Nine,
yeah.
Yeah, two parents and
yeah,
seven kids.
They're all very musical and they're very good.
Two of the kids are really small.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it?
And they've got them doing something. Well, you brought your husband Larry along, or he brought you, I guess.
Yes.
And but at least on the website, you're not listed, Larry, as actually playing an instrument, but you do the sound for all the shows?
Yeah, I do the sound, run the seating and everything.
Have you been involved in sound production for a long time?
Oh, yeah.
Have you had a musical background yourself?
Yeah, I played steel guitar some until I had a stroke back in 1988. But
and that left the fingers not working quite so well?
Yeah, it it slowed me down real good.
He still practices and plays at home, and that's enjoyable for him, you know. But we've both been involved in the Opry. It's a team thing, you know, for several years. I've been in basically Opry work for about 35 years now.
When you say Opry world, what does that mean?
Opry work.
Opera
well,
work.
Playing
opera
the
work.
Opry shows.
Yeah. Okay. In various communities?
Right. It all started, I think, back in 77, 78, where I was asked to join a group in Bethany, and I became their lead guitar player at the time, and we were doing opera shows right there, and they had a building in Bethany, and that lasted for about a year and a half, and then the people that had it, he worked at CAT and started traveling and couldn't continue with it, so we decided that we would like to keep the show going, and we live in Decatur, and that's where the Opry moved to, and we opened the show in Decatur at an old Danceland roller rink building out by the lake, and the rest is history. We've been doing music shows, and I've played other musical operas for about the last 30 years of my life here.
Is the one in Decatur still going?
No, no. We had it for about 12 years in that location, and then we moved to the Civic Center in Decatur and did some shows up there. And then I've played some different opera shows over a period of time. And in fact, I was the guitar player on the Bement Opry when the people that had it, Mr. Bone, decided to retire. Hmm. And he asked me and Larry if we'd be interested in maybe investing in the Opry and keeping it going. And we kind of said, yes, we think we would. So, and we still have on the stage several of the original members of the show that was on the show at the time that he had it, too. So.
And which are the, I'm looking at the band members right
well,
now.
Well, one of them is Kenny Honecker, is our bass player. Mm-hmm. And he was there from the very beginning when they first opened the show in Bement. And Mike Brake, I think our drummer, was one of the original members. We, who else was one of them?
Steve. Saul.
Oh, yes.
Steve Ingram, Saul Simple.
Right. Yeah. He's our comedian and on the show, and he was there from the beginning of the show also.
In case when you say Bement Country Opry, of course, probably a lot of people, including myself, think of the Grand Ole Opry, and it's not a building like that.
Well, it's not on that grand a scale. Yeah. You know, we only have seating for about 250 people. But, you know, it is a converted, it used to be a grocery store or something like that. And, of course, there's been a lot of work done to it to make it into an opera. And we have it's a regular opera show. There's no dancing or anything like that. It's a stage performance. And that we do every week. And like I said, we bring in special guests each week. And, we have the band does a portion of the show, and then we bring the guest on, and they do their portion of the show. So we have some guests coming in. March the 19th is going to be Tia Goins, and that's a Saturday. That's a Saturday show. And she's from Nashville. She's one of the new Nashville people coming up. Excellent singer. I just cannot stress how good she is. And then we also have a show called Nadine. It's off the RFD TV series and Larry's Country Diner show. And actually, that's April the 8th and April the 9th. We've almost sold out the Friday show, and so we decided to go ahead and add a Saturday show to that. And she's kind of a old lady comedian, does a comedy skit on that show, but she's very popular, and it's going to be a great show.
And if you want more information on these shows, you can go to BementCountryOpry.com. You brought along a CD, and we have a recording with you and
me and me.
And right, but I mean the other one with Mike, you and Mike coming
yes,
up also.
Yes. Uh-huh.
But let's hear this one from you. It's called a disc called Totally Sondra, and why is it called that?
Well, it's because I played all the tracks on the recording. I did the lead part and then went back and did the bass part and the rhythm and did everything but the drums.
And so this is the opening cut on that CD. It's called Under the Double Eagle, with Sondra Woolley here on Live and Local from the Bement Country Opry, and Under the Double Eagle. Sondra Woolley playing all the parts except the drums in that performance of Under the Double Eagle from her disc called Totally Sondra, and that's put out by the Bement Country Opry, where she and Larry, her husband, are the owners and operators. Bement Country Opry hosts music every Friday, including tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, with Sondra herself, joined by fellow guitarist Mike Latham. You both be playing guitar on that program?
Yes.
Is this sort of like a dueling guitar program, tribute to Chet Atkins?
Well, somewhat, I guess.
Or does one of you take the lead and one of you takes the accompanying
role? Yeah,
it will
be sharing it back and forth.
And is this playing, are these, when you call it you're calling it picking on Chet, are these tunes that Chet Atkins wrote or adaptations of his arrangements?
These are the songs that he is pretty well known for as a performer. These are the songs that he actually played and were some of his greatest hits.
We have a sample here from a previous show, I gather, that you and Mike did together?
Yeah, I believe it was.
Uh-huh. From how long ago, any idea?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what the date is on that.
But it's a tune called Copper Kettle. Is it just the two of you involved in this as well?
He's playing that one pretty much by himself, I think.
Okay, with the opera band behind him?
Yeah.
Okay. Mike Latham here on Live and Local.
Thank you.
Mike Latham performing a tune called Copper Kettle. And you can hear him with Sondra Woolley tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at the Bement Country Opry. He sounds like an awfully good guitarist.
He is. He's exceptionally good.
He's been at the Opry a number of times?
Yes, he's kind of my number one guy. I call if something happens and I can't possibly make the show, which has not happened very often, but once in a while, you know, if I happen to get sick or something, we'll call Mike and he'll come in and stand in for me and do the show and take care of the band and stuff like that. But this is why this show is so special, is because we actually get to do it together.
Is this your first time doing it together?
Yeah, as a featured artist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we've done other shows together, but just as part of a group, you know.
Have you done an Atkins tribute show before with
no.
him?
No.
So this is really a first time around.
It is.
Well, that should be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Let's hear another one. Are these Atkins tunes, the two you sent me, the Copper Kettle and the
yes.
trombone?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And on this one, you're featured with the
right.
band. And it's Sondra Woolley here on Live and Local. That was called Trombone with Sondra Woolley and the band from the Bement Country Opry. She'll be there with Mike Latham tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. And did you want to mention a few of the other shows coming up?
Yes, we have Nashville artist T. Graham Brown coming in September, September the 17th. And he's quite a well-known performer in the Nashville area. And you mentioned Wade Benson Landry. He's a Cajun fiddler from Branson area. He will be in on August the 26th doing a show. That's a Friday night show. So, and we do have a full schedule of shows available. If anybody wants a schedule, they could give me a call, and I'd be glad to send them out one. The number's area 217-877-6499. That'll get them direct to me, and we can get him all the information he need for the Bement Country Opry.
And if you forget that number, you can go remind yourself and look at their schedule at the website, bementcountryopry.com. And it's Sondra and Larry Woolley joining us on the show. Thank you very much for coming over and doing it for us
today.
Well,
thank you for asking.
And we hope you get you some extra folks in the audience.
Well, we hope so too.
It's Live and Local. Here's a rundown just really quickly of some of the other performances in our area. The Opole Philharmonic of Poland is at the Krannert Center in Urbana tonight at 7:30, where you can also see Man of La Mancha. It's opening night for a four-performance run this weekend. put on by the U of I School of Music Opera Program. The King Singers from England are at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts tonight at 7:30, and then they'll be at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield Saturday night, and we'll be doing an interview with one of their members for tomorrow's show on Live and Local, so I hope you tune in for that. The Decatur String Festival is at Stephen Decatur Middle School tonight at 7 o'clock. The Irish band Exorna is at Celtic Mist Pub in Springfield tonight at 7:30. The Frank Trumpeter Quartet are at Southside Pub in Springfield tonight at 7:30. It's the play Once Upon a Mattress at Parkland College Theater tomorrow night at 7:30 and Saturday as well. The Boneyard Jazz Quintet is at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow night at 5. And it is Chainsaw DuPont playing blues at Memphis on Main in downtown Champaign tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. Bolokata Konde and the percussion ensemble Rhythm Mending is at the Independent Media Center in Urbana tomorrow night at 7:30. And Cartoon Jazz from the Community Arts Resource in St. Joseph is playing tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Prince of Peace Lutheran Church there in St. Joseph. And that's about what we have time to mention on the show right now. Support for our show comes in part from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday's tasting from 2 to 6 p.m. features a selection of 10 different organic wines. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WYNL FM, and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. WYNL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. For Live and Local, I'm Kevin Kelly, wishing you a great day.